Movies and Booze. I'm Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
This day week, our next outside broadcast will take place at the National Maritime Museum in Dunleary. That's this day week. I don't know if there will be any tickets left for it, but if you'd like to be, at least try being in the audience, you can go to newstalk.com/events, newstalk.com/events. Also, to plug something else, which is Screen Time with our old friend John Fardy here of News Talk Towers. He did an interview with Angelina Jolie, which is it is actually now available online. Apparently, they've run away together to a secret location and he won't be working here anymore. Our panel in the studio is Fionnuala Jones, Linda Coogan and cherry tomato fan Brian Lloyd. Good afternoon to you all. Explain the cherry tomatoes thing.
Oh, God. All right. So there are cherry tomatoes on the bridge going into Drumcondra. There's been a lot of chatter online about these cherry tomatoes.
Yes.
And they're still there.
There. Yeah.
That's all I can tell you. The birds haven't taken them away. I don't fully understand what the appeal is, or rather the lack of appeal.
Yeah,
because they look great. They're just there, and they're still there. 4 days they've been there.
Yeah,
and it's just become this thing. I don't know. I don't fully understand it.
Yeah,
I don't get it. I don't pretend to know these things.
So if you're living in Dublin or living in Cork, still trying to dig your children out of the snow, this is the kind of things we get up to in the capital. Because
well,
we're so
have
bored.
Snow, okay? We have
because
cherry
we're
tomatoes.
So bored and so kind of.
It's the middle of January, all right? Stop yucking people's yums, okay?
Right. So, Linda, tell us. Tell us the two wines you're going to talk about. You've also got a bit of a list of things.
What's hot and what's not? So these two obviously are hot.
Yes.
It is a white Spanish Verdejo grape, Verdejo. Marcus de Riscal, a very well-known brand. Mm. So. Better known for their red. This is their white that we're going to try, and it's gorgeous from Rueda. And Biscardo Nero Passo is it's like a baby Amarone. So
oh, yeah, I've had that before.
Have you had
yes,
that one?
This is nice. Yeah.
It's very Moorish, very luscious, really, really nice. And it's also a hot kind of style at the moment as well.
Right.
For 2025.
Okay. Give us a couple of examples of what's not hot or what shouldn't be hot.
That's controversial, you see. So I think that people are kind of getting sick of Prosecco fatigue. I know. So ooh. I'm saying Cava and Cremant would be wines to try instead. Also, New Zealand Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, I know there's a big wine fair coming up at the end of this month for consumers, which you should go to. It's Australia and New Zealand wines. But there's other grapes to try. There is lots of Riesling, Chardonnay, Pinot Gris from Marlborough in New Zealand. But just explore, you know, Sauvignon Blanc from different parts of New Zealand, not just Marlborough.
Yeah.
They would be two of the controversial ones.
No, influencer marketing without substance.
Yeah.
Tell us what you mean by that.
That's scalding.
Yeah. I know.
Let's influencers in general are lovely.
Absolutely.
Aren't they, Fionnuala? Yeah.
No, without substance. It's like you, Fionnuala, going, I'm an expert on wine now because I do movies and booze. You know what I mean?
She and does
you
do that. That's our new thing.
That's me at every family party.
No, but fine. You know a little bit more than other people because obviously you're learning every week that you're here, right? Yep. But it's somebody who is a lifestyle influencer or makeup or whatever, and then they start saying, this is gorgeous, look at the bottle, it turns into a great lampshade when you're finished. Wrecks my head.
God, is that the way you talk when you're doing these things, Fionnuala?
We're looking at you. That just drives me mad. So there's lots of people who are absolutely expert
in wine. But
they're
getting sponsored to do that.
Yeah.
But they have to say it's SponCon, don't they?
Yeah, I know. But a lot of them, I know they have to now, but it still wrecks my head because people buy into the whole lifestyle of it rather than the actual wine itself. And because usually they're brands that look pretty and have a lot of deep pockets that they want, you know, it just wrecks my head.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll leave it there because we're not going to get even more angry. She'll get anger as they are.
She'll have drink taken.
Exactly.
As well. Yeah.
Good getting that out of the way.
Right. So the two movies today, Maria, is Angelina, aforementioned, going to win an Oscar for this?
No.
Oh, right. Okay.
No. Would you like me to continue?
Yeah. Okay. That's.
She's not going to win it.
No. Okay.
And she doesn't deserve it either.
Oh.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No,
are you going against the tide here slightly? I thought there was a lot of, great.
There has been buzz.
Yes.
But I think it's artificial buzz.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it, I think, is Right. So this is one of three films. It's a part of a trilogy that Pablo Larraín and Stephen Knight have done. The first was Jackie, if you remember. That was Natalie Portman. Then there was Spencer, if you remember that one, which was the one about Diana and Kristen Stewart, and she was running through hallways and she was seeing ghosts and blah. And this one is about Maria Callas, who is the opera singer. And I would argue this is the weakest of the trilogy.
I think for a few reasons.
First of all, who cares about opera, really? Let's be honest about it.
Oh my God.
What? Like, I mean, come on. Like, who cares?
We've offended the Prosecco fans, the influencers, and the people who like opera.
Opera fans.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, unless you're like writing letters to the Irish Times, you don't really, who cares about opera? Let's call it a spade here. And I think on top of it as well is there's a real air of empty tragedy about this, because it's like, oh, she had this beautiful life and she was so gorgeous and she was so beloved, and like, her egotism is what killed her, realistically, is what the film is trying to say, that her ego, and that she couldn't let go of her memories. That's what got her in the end. I mean, she took a lot of drugs. Like, I mean, there's literally a whole thing in the film where she hallucinates that she's been interviewed by this television crew, and she calls one of the interviewers Mandrax. Mandrax is the name of a...
Mandy's.
So it's like... Okay, all right, so you're saying she was just off her bin half the time, like, you know, walking around Paris, and it was like,
sure,
okay, grand.
Why not? The second film is A Real Pain, where Jesse Eisenberg stretches himself by playing a neurotic control freak.
Yes, but it is tempered by Kieran Culkin being a over-the-top, overly gregarious, kind of annoyingly loud character as well.
Another stretch.
It's like, my God, the range of these two people. But it's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Actually, yeah, I know I sounded cynical there. I'm going to enjoy it too.
No, yeah, I totally dug it. It was like, it's like a really fun, as far as I can say, a fun road trip movie about two lads that go to a concentration camp. I swear to God, I will explain more.
But apparently, like, because they are both like this in real life, and Jesse Eisenberg, and like,
he wrote and directed it.
Yeah, Kieran Culkin apparently doesn't learn his lines until 5 minutes beforehand, which is driving Eisenberg absolutely insane.
He just like rocks up and he's like, okay, let's rock and roll this scene. And you can tell, you can actually see Jesse Eisenberg hanging out in the background, because he was writing and directing. And you can actually see like the veins appear on the side of his. And you think maybe, oh, is that just him going method or something? I bet he actually was like seconds away from an aneurysm watching him go.
Kind of genius, though.
Oh, brilliant.
At the same time. Can we get back to the cherry tomatoes? I didn't really get it. Are the cherry tomatoes up for grabs or what?
They're up for grabs, but no one
don't grab them.
Don't grab them.
That ruins it. Like, the whole point is that they're on the bridge and they've been left. We're just there to observe them.
Are they on the vine or not?
Do you know?
No, they're just
singular and they're just sitting on the bridge.
They must be rotten at this stage,
though.
No, they've been preserved because it's been so cold.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Somebody says Martinborough is better than New Zealand, a wine region, than Marlborough. Just saying.
Martinborough is amazing, but you'd spend a little bit more money and they're harder to find, the Pinot Noir in particular from Martinborough. And they are a little bit pricey, but they're much more complex and amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, so tell us about Twisted Love.
Twisted Love is a book adaptation coming to Netflix. I'm going to be honest, it's not one that I was familiar with, but it's hugely successful. It's by an author called Anna Huang. It's a romance novel. Hugely successful, as I said, began in 2021, started with Twisted Love, followed by Twisted Games, Twisted Hate, Twisted Lies. It's a bit of adult series.
Okay, are there paddles in it?
I don't think it's like...
It's not that far.
But no. It's just like, it's romantic. I read a synopsis of the first book. I'm going to be honest, it didn't seem that great to me. But again, anyone who read this, please feel free to text it and tell me I'm wrong and I will read it. Basically, it follows this one central character who seemingly she ends up kind of falling in love with her brother's friend.
Phew, I do pause there in front of you.
I know.
I thought, wow, it's way beyond paddles. Falls in love with his brother.
As complex as a Martinborough, yeah. But the brother's friend is obviously like a bit emotionally repressed and the brother's really protective. But then the brother's friend is also protective. Again.
Are these teenagers?
I think they're adults. I think the central character is like a photography student. I think they're like college age going into. But when I say like this, it sold 12 million copies to date. The debut book spent 60 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. It sold translation rights in 34 countries. The deal with Netflix is worth 7 figures. So like, this book is huge, and huge on TikTok as well. Hashtag Twisted Series is like 2 billion views on TikTok. And Anna Hwang, the author, has over 1 billion views. So like, this is huge. It just happened to have bypassed me. Will be huge news for the fans of this, I would imagine. No idea on casting, no idea when it's coming out. But yeah, that will be coming to Netflix next year, maybe the year after, depending on how quickly things move. And again, listeners, if this book is good, let me know and I will read it. But I wasn't sold.
And there are reviews for the second series of Severance, which a lot of people were looking forward to.
And they're good. Yeah. Thank God. It would want to be. We've been waiting for so long. Yeah, it is a perfect Rotten Tomato score, which again, like, that's based on like 40 reviews. I've pulled out some of the other reviews that have kind of highlighted it and again seem to be flagging that season two is good, very much staying on form. Variety said, whatever the destination Severance is aiming for, the journey dramatises the arbitrary rules and compartmentalised nature of modern work better than anything else on air. Severance season two is an astounding achievement, a flawless showcase of craft, performance and thought, compulsive storytelling. Praise Keir.
Has it dropped yet?
This time next week, January 17th. I think you can watch like the first 8 minutes of it if you are an Apple TV Plus subscriber.
Right.
But I haven't done that because I get that's obviously a tactic to get people to subscribe, whatever. But like, respectfully, I'm not doing that. I'm going to wait till the whole thing is out or whatever. And yeah. The writer, Mohamed El Massi, has said that the story is like fully mapped out.
I love that. That's so good because I hate when that happens, like with Lost. Remember with Lost?
And it was just kind of...
They just didn't know what they were doing.
They're literally figuring out as they go along. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So he is the full story mapped out, whether it ends up being like there isn't an official announcement for season three yet. It kind of seems like the writing's on the wall that it will be announced. It's kind of inevitable. But then there is kind of a question of how long and where do you take this story? You know what I mean? But
yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
We can tell.
Anya says, Marie Callas was a beautiful woman. I'm appalled at your description of her and your judgmental attitude. Another text that says, who cares about opera? Who is this idiot? real critics live and breathe all the arts.
I appreciate all meats of our cultural stew, okay?
Yeah.
But I draw the line at opera because I feel that it is an elitist art form that purposely makes itself obscure and obtuse to the common working man. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Fraser Crane. I mean, if you watch a Fraser
episode... Yeah, I mean, no one more egalitarian than Fraser Crane.
Doctor who doesn't want
to be like him.
Anyway, let's turn our attention to something everyone does in street corners. Have a glass of wine.
Okay, Marcus de Riscal Verdejo is the name of the grape. It is very similar to a Sauvignon Blanc. And it is Spain's number one white wine that the Spanish people drink in the bucket loads. Not very popular in Ireland yet, but if you are looking for them, you need to look for Rueda, which is the region that these wines are from, or UEDA, D-O Rueda. And you get a real kind of lively, fresh, crisp expression of, you know, zesty fruit, lemon, little bit of spices going on. Herbaceous. And it's just gorgeous on
its own. It is zesty. Like, yeah,
it's not as kind of acidic, you know, it wouldn't give you heartburn or anything like that, the way some of the...
It's not really a big selling point, heartburn.
I know, but a load of the mass-produced wines, that's what you get when you are, you know, drinking a white, fresh, crisp wine. And I just think Verdejo is how we all say it, is amazing. On the back labels, they have a green kind of label to say that it's a youthful style. So if it doesn't have a green label, it might have a black, which means it's aged for a little bit of time. 13% alcohol available in, I think it's Donnybrook Fair have this, Dunn's have it. And where else has it? O'Brien's, Bradley's, in Cork, and that's for you.
Okay, that's very nice. Okay.
She's on her phone there, not even listening.
Is she? Yeah,
she's looking up.
She's looking up
she's
a wine
ordering
to
ordering a crate of it. She's just putting it on her wine influencer account.
You see, I don't mind that. I have no problem if you're after trying it and you learn about the region and you know, that's fine.
Okay.
Why are we picking on, you know, I'm not being mean to you, Fionnuala. I'm not picking on you.
Okay.
At all.
That escalated quickly. Right.
I promise, right?
Speaking of escalating, which film would you like to abuse first, Brad?
Let's go with Maria.
Let's go with Maria after this break.
Medicine cabinet is unlocked. You can throw it all away.
That is not what the doctor told us we should do.
Was he even a doctor?
He's a specialist, madam.
And what does he specialize in?
Blood. And that is why he took a sample of your blood. But he said, even before the result of the test, we should get your medication under control.
It is under control. It's under my control. And doctors hate that. I need you to make me an appointment with a hairdresser that doesn't speak. And when I write my autobiography, I will title it The Day Ferruccio Saved My Life.
And what day was that, Mother?
Every day. Every single day. That's why I hate you. I fall into a river, and you always fish me out.
Yes, Mother.
Book me a table at a cafe where the waiters know who I am. I'm in the mood for adulation.
There you go. That's the drug-addled Maria Callas there in the biopic Maria. Mm. You see, I mean, your point about opera is well made. Though Mary wants to know, it's rather like rugby. Would your operating colleague agree? Do you hate rugby?
No.
Okay, thank you. But that's not the point in the sense of if she has a compelling story, it shouldn't matter if she's a chess player or an interior 100%,
designer. 100%. And I'll give you a great example. I would argue that The Crown has been one of the best well-produced soap operas of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And I am an ardent anti-monarchist.
Really?
Shocker.
But you know what I'm never mentioned that.
No, but you know what I'm trying to say, like, as in, like, just because I disagree with everything that fundamentally stands for, I can still watch something and appreciate it. That has not got to do with it. The problem I have with Maria is that, like, I think Angelina Jolie was so kind of wrapped up in the tragedy of it and how kind of, you know, she was this beautiful, faded glory of a woman, and you know, she was also tragic, and she lived in this small apartment, and the whole film is basically set over the last 7 days of her life, and she's kind of like going through this sort of moments of reverie where she remembers her, you know, relationship with Aristotle Onassis, and you know, it cuts to black and white, and the two of them are kind of dancing around each other in this Parisian ballroom, and you know, he's all like trying to woo her, and he's, you know, giving it this, that, and the other, and you're like, who gives a shit? Like, I mean, like, who, like, what? Like, I mean, okay, so Aristotle Onassis apparently treated her terribly, abused her, and all the rest of it. Never mentioned, isn't discussed, don't talk about it, nothing. The fact that, you know, Maria Callas was a desperately, desperately controlling woman who regularly cancelled concerts and all the rest of it, they touch on that briefly. And, you know, like, there's a scene in it where a person comes up to her at that cafe, it's a few minutes after that, and this guy goes, oh, you know, I waited out in the rain for you in London, I think it was, or something like that, and you didn't show, why didn't you show? And she starts roaring and shouting, he goes, I was sick, I was always sick. And it's like, okay, so are you just saying that, you know, were you a diva, or was it, you know, were you actually sick and no one believed you? What is it? It doesn't go into any kind of detail. It doesn't give us any kind of conclusion. It's just all sort of wrapped up in the, oh, it was so tragic. Oh, it was so terrible. Oh, it was so bad.
It sounds like you just found her annoying.
I did. I really did. And in fact, what I said this to somebody and I kind of got a bit of stick for it, but I'll say it now because I'm already in a hole. I may as well keep digging.
Yes.
It reminded me of, have any of you seen The Birdcage?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So you know Nathan Lane's character.
Yeah.
At the start of it, before he kind of has the dinner, and he's all like, "I can't go on."
Yeah.
You know, and like I gave him purin tablets, and he just scraped off the aspirin. Yeah. It's like that. It's like
he's
that.
He's brilliant in
that. He's brilliant in that because it's comedic
and it's camp. Yeah.
And it's camp and it's ridiculous. Okay. And this has none of that. It's not funny. Like all the tragedy and all the. It's all like there's no kind of awareness of like you sound ridiculous. It just this film really bugged me, and I know a lot of other critics whose opinions I would respect loved it. Donald Clark in the Irish Times gave it 5 stars. I mean, sure, if that's what he saw, great. I saw the same film and I did not like it. So.
Was
yeah.
it her portrayal of her, though? Was it Angelina's portrayal
see,
of her
this
as opposed
is it.
To, like, the story of her and what you got of her character?
Yeah, see, that's interesting because Faye Dunaway was trying to get a film of this off the ground for years and couldn't get it done. And if you saw the documentary that was out a few months back, she talks about it. And she played, Faye Dunaway, played Maria Callas on Broadway. And it was, I think it was called Maestro or something like that, or Maestra. And it was brilliant. And it was fantastic. And everyone raved about it. And, you know, you can see why somebody like Faye Dunaway could do it well, because she does have the reputation of being a diva, and she does have the reputation of being a difficult woman. And you can kind of join those two together. But Angelina Jolie, I mean, like, you know, she is known as a beautiful woman, and she is kind of a woman that is entering into the middle part of her life. And we all know how horribly middle-aged women are treated in Hollywood. But I would look at something like The Substance, for example, with Demi Moore, and I think that is a performance. That is something that really talks about just how empty and awful it is how women are treated in Hollywood and how kind of art and whatever has but nothing to do.
Is that what this film was about?
Kind of. That's what they were trying to go for. It was trying to go for all these different things. It was like, oh, you know, she was a beautiful woman, but she was a faded glory and all the rest of it. And, you know, she lost her voice. And was it her ego that did it? And it's just trying to hit 10 different points and doesn't land on any of them. And then it's trying to be kind of high concept as well, in the sense of, like, you know, she has these moments of reverie where, you know, does she remember it, or was it how she imagined it? And, you know, it's just very unfocused. And that sometimes can work. Like, you go back and look at Jackie, for example, which was done by the same director, the same screenwriter. And it does that thing of, like, it uses real life, it kind of meshes real life footage with recreation. And you can't tell the difference. Like, you don't know if it's the Zapruder film or if it's Pablo Larraín kind of shooting it on 16mm and all the rest of it. It's brilliant. But in this, I don't think it works. I think it's trying to mesh the two together. And it just, for me anyway, it just didn't connect at all. So
yeah. Well, actually, someone says the other two in the Misery trilogy of movies, Jackie and Spencer, are also so lost in the misery. Best summed up by Natalie Portman's hammy, "I never wanted to be a Kennedy."
Yeah, I mean, again, I know people that did not like, I know a lot of people that had serious problems with Spencer, because it seemed to be kind of it seemed to focus in on Diana's eating disorders and stuff like that. It really seemed to zero in on that. And with Jackie, it kind of seemed to be talking about, you know, the fact that Jackie Kennedy was just interested in artifice and ceremony and pomp and circumstance. But it kind of, I felt Jackie kind of turned it into, no, this has to have meaning, because there won't be a place like this ever again in history, you know, that sort of way. And in the case of Spencer, I felt anyway, it was talking about the fact that Diana was a woman who was taught that she was in a fairy tale. She was taught she was in a fairy tale story, but she wasn't. She was in a horror story and she was locked into it. But when it came to Maria, it was just like, it's a really egotistical woman sauntering around Paris, imagining herself being better than she was and being more loved than she was.
Yeah.
And it's just,
crikey. John says, that guy on your panel is the worst snob I've ever heard on News Talk. I don't know. John, do you have a list of snobs that you've heard? Who's your top five?
That is high praise. High praise.
Considering Maria Callas died at 54, was basically pimped out to Nazi officers by her mother, who completely messed her up in Greece during World War II, her life was actually tragic.
No, I don't deny that. I am not denying that she had a tragic life. She absolutely did. But I don't think the film really kind of couches it in any kind of detail. Like, it just has small little scenes, and we're supposed to infer from that great, it asks us to take huge leaps, and I don't really think there's any kind of balance or any kind of, like, emotional couching in it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, we'll move off that to some real actual tragedy happening in the world, as I'm sure a lot of you know and have been very upset to find out. A series of multimillionaires had their houses burnt to the ground in LA over the last few days. And it may affect award season as well.
It is affecting award season.
Oh, can I stop biting my thumb now?
The SAGs were supposed to have an in-person nomination announcement that ended up going via press release. Shout out Nicola Coughlan, who was nominated for Bridgerton.
Nice.
Great to see in her category. The Oscar nominations that I talked about last week, or the voting period, that's all pushed out now. That's pushed out to January 12th. Critics' Choice Award ceremony has been shifted to January 26th. But Jean Smart has come out, obviously star of Hacks, star in her own right in general, but predominantly seen in Hacks as of late. She came out on Instagram to say that none of the award ceremonies should be televised, or, like, if they are, like, the money should be donated to victims of the fires and the firefighters, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like split people online, obviously, because there is a thing of, obviously we shouldn't be having, like, lots of pomp and ceremony over people who are, like, very wealthy when all of this is going on. And also, like, respectfully, there are other people that live in Los Angeles that aren't multimillionaires and, like, actors and stuff. There are normal, quote-unquote, people. But there's also
an argument... Well, they have to breathe the smoke from the multimillionaires' houses catching fire. Yeah, the poor things.
There's also an argument... I've seen an argument online that basically it's like also the awards ceremonies also create other work for other people. Yeah. And also the awards aren't... Like, obviously we see the red carpet, we see the main people. But you're talking about, like, shows and films nominated. Like, there's so many other people behind the camera, in front of the camera. Like, it's kind of...
No, that's all very true.
Yeah.
It's just when I see James Woods crying on television, my sympathy evaporates.
Yeah.
Quite a lot.
Yeah.
And then you leave that television studio and go into this huge gas-guzzling car and doesn't see a connection between those events.
Yeah.
You know, Fair. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What about the sets for Maria?
The what?
The sets. The sumptuous sets of somebody's...
It looks gorgeous. Again, it's a beautiful... Like, okay, wow, okay. it is gorgeous. And the fashion in it is great as well.
Yeah, like, if you're going to win an Oscar for that, for best dress?
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if it got something for best costume design or something like that. Like, I mean, it looks gorgeous. It's a beautifully shot film. It looks beautiful. Edward Lachman, the cinematographer, did a great job at it. The fashion in it as well is all great. They have all the dresses and all the rest of it. I always find if you're looking at the fashion and if you're talking about the cinematography and if you're talking about all these things and you're not talking about the core of the film, you're looking for something to hang your hat on, as it were.
Yeah, indeed. Right, you are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. We have to take a break. After that, more Movies and Booze. We're still in the midst of Movies and Booze. Fionnuala Jones, Linda Coogan and avid opera fan Brian Lloyd are still with us to talk about various things. The Running Man movie. Mm-hmm. This is like the one that was Arnold Schwarzenegger was in it.
Exactly that. Yes. It was based on the 1982 novel by Stephen King that he published under a pseudonym. And as you said, it was adapted into
Richard
a film.
Bachman.
Yes.
Sorry.
Richard Bachman, correct. This is not a table quiz, but I love that.
Why did he write it under a pseudonym?
Because he was publishing so much. I'm sorry, I'm a massive Stephen King head. He was publishing so much at the time that his publisher basically told him, you need to pick up a different name. So he basically created this character, Richard Bachman, and he took it from Bachman Turner Overdrive. And then like published like a few books. I have like the omnibus. It was like The Running Man. There was another one called The Long Walk that's been turned into a film as well, and then there was a third one called
Skipping Something
Rush, I think it was, or something like that. But they're all like The Long Walk and The Running Man were the two best of the Bachman books.
All right, okay, sorry to introduce you there.
That's absolutely okay. It was adapted into a 1987 movie, as you said, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's like a chase thriller set in a dystopian America in the year 2025.
That's gas. America isn't dystopian at all.
No,
now
it's actually
it turned out
fine
well.
And a normal place.
Yeah,
they're adapting it again. You know what, I know we give out about adaptions, I let this slide because it's been 1987, or that's a long enough time. I'm like, yeah, fair enough. Coleman Domingo's just been cast as the game show host. So basically it's like this fella's trying to compete. His daughter's very ill and he's competing in this. Like, it's a bit Squid Game, pre-Squid Game, but like he's running away and he's being chased by people and he has to stay alive and not be killed.
Yeah.
That's basically it, yeah.
So as I said, Arnold Schwarzenegger was in the original. Coleman Domingo's just been cast in this new adaptation that's coming later this year. It's coming out November 7th, 2025. And he's playing the game show host. And then you have also Glenn Powell is playing the lead contestant that they're focusing on this time around. And then you also have Josh Brolin is playing like the kind of overarching villain, I think. I'm very intrigued by this, but I think I'm going to read the book first because I haven't read it.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. It's really good. It's directed by Edgar Wright as well, who previously did like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. And I think what's interesting about it is the fact that like when you read the book anyway is like a satire. Like it's a satire of like reality TV before there was reality TV and the idea of like, you know, America will just end up eating itself. And like the film, like the 1987 film was like, I mean, it was directed by what's his face? Paul Michael Glazer, Starsky.
Yeah.
From Starsky and Hutch. And he was just like making a completely bog standard 80s action movie. It's still great. Like it's still good fun, like and stuff. But like the book is a lot more, I think, smarter and funnier than this. So I'm really excited about this.
And I love Coleman Domingo.
A lot of actually Stephen King books that have been turned into films have been just ever so slightly dumbed down.
Yeah. They've always kind of like sounded off the edges. Like the only one I think that genuinely has ever kind of reached past is The Shining, and that's obviously because of Kubrick, but I'm really excited about this. I really, and like Coleman Domingo, like him playing a kind of like Caesar Flickerman type of character, I'm like, definitely, he can do that. Because he can't do any wrong. Did you see Sing Sing yet?
Not yet. No, I know. I will. Because he's going to get the Oscar.
He deserves it. I will rush the stage if he doesn't win Best Actor for Sing Sing. He deserves it. I'm sorry.
Wow. If Angelina Jolie wins. Neuropasa, was that how you...
Neuropasa, yeah.
Neuropasa.
Biscardo is the name of the brand. And this is, again, it's funny because a lot of people working in the wine business, the trade and that, are kind of sick of this style. This is a passamento where the grapes are semi-dried and it's much more luscious and silky texture and all that. It gives kind of sweet fruits and that. It's really, really soft and silky and gorgeous to drink on its own with controversial chocolate or like really slow-cooked stews. It's a real winter warmer. But us in the trade are getting a bit sick of it now, do you know? And consumers still love it. So I still think that this is a big, big, big... No, we are that we're like, oh, find Linda's something sick of it, else.
But, yeah.
But it's a great winter warmer. So for the next few months, enjoy drinking it and then move on to your chilled reds. But can I just say as well, though, remember we were talking about Marcus de Riscal. Do you know the red, which people would know? That always had that gold mesh on it for sustainable reasons. That's now off the bottle, so that'll please you, Fionnuala, as well.
Love that. Yeah.
So again, sustainability is hot. So again, look for lesser heavy bottles and things like that as well when you're buying.
Okay. So sustainability is hot. What else is hot?
Hot. Drinking less but better quality. So I'm all for low and no and all that, but really I'm kind of going moderation, but drinking, spending a little bit more. But the key thing for the new year for me is education. People learning a little bit more by online courses, by Bridget O'Hara's book, The Home Sommelier. Amazing book. Leslie Williams, who you obviously know very well, he's a course in Rathmines College next week. Education. Learn a little bit more. There's loads of courses. Read the books. Watch YouTube. Oz Clark. Wine from Jimmy, loads of ways to learn about wine, and then you just become a bit more empowered and you can make better decisions.
And say all the usual places wine comes from, are there any kind of, in the next year, new places that maybe wine will become
from? Okay, so Poland, Greece, Hungary. There is actually a Polish disco on tomorrow night in Fun Valley Stables, you know, the place in Dublin 8, I think it is. It's only a tenner in. 90s gear, dress up and taste a load of Polish wines. How cool is that? The girls, Maggie and Magda, are amazing. They're really kind of flying the flag for Poland. Greek and Hungarian wine as well. Ones to watch.
Right, Polish wine. We probably haven't seen a lot of that.
No,
here.
I know. Like, look, it's really interesting. I tried, they're a little bit more expensive because they're small volumes of it, you know. But look in the Polish shops and a few specialist shops as well, you're going to find them. But these girls, again, to follow on social media, they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. So Polish Wine Fest, and it's on tomorrow night. So lesser known, like that's completely lesser known countries that people wouldn't even have heard about. But again, if you know a little bit more, if you like Pinot Noir normally, and you drink it from Chile, try Burgundy, try, obviously it's a bit more expensive, but try Central Otago, try different regions. And the only way you know where to try is to learn a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's all good. And that's lovely, of course.
Yeah, Neuropasa, you like this yourself. Yeah. This is available in Pinto Wines, McHugh's, Donnybrook Fair, between 15 and 20 euro, depending on where, if it's on offer or not, but it's so silky and delish.
Yeah. Must say I've got it cheaper for that than that.
When it's on offer, it can be $13.99.
I do be looking at the price. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is A Real Pain. It's in cinemas from today. Here's a clip.
Now, if you've got time, we could swing by Underground Dublin. It is fascinating. I just think it's a bit overhyped, personally. The big hitter is the Grodzka Gate, you know.
Is the gate still exists?
Yo, dude, I think we should move.
Right. I think we should move to another train car.
What do you mean?
You don't feel weird being in a first-class car?
No, we paid for it. It's not hurting anybody. No.
Dude, we are Jews on a train in Poland. Think about it.
Benji?
Yeah.
You're all right up there?
Yeah, sure. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, you know, it's, to be fair, fascinating.
No, I mean, I just feel like... Sorry.
Okay.
Is anyone else, like, feeling this right now?
Feeling what?
Like, this creepy feeling that, like, you know, we're, like, royalty? On this train? I mean, does no one else see the irony here?
Jesus.
Like, eating fancy food and sitting up here when 80 years ago we would have been herded into the backs of these things like cattle.
Got it.
Okay, Benji, I don't think anybody here wants to hear that right now.
Okay, why not? Why doesn't anyone want to hear it?
Because it's depressing.
Okay, look, depressing? It's okay.
You're raising an interesting sensitivity here. It does sometimes come up on these tours. You're staying in fancy hotels, eating posh food, and at the same time, you're looking back at the horrors of your family history.
Right, okay. Yeah, he just repeated what he said back to him, hoping that was calm.
But doing
down.
It in a calm and soothing tone, yeah, that yeah. kind of helps
who's
him.
Who's the English actor?
Will Sharpe.
Right, okay.
You would have seen him in... Did you ever see Gary Hadji?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in that. Like, great, he's an upcoming actor. He's brilliant. But yeah, this is really kind of a two-man kind of show. It's between Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin. And as you heard there, like, he's very over the top. He's very gregarious. There's a great line in it where Jesse, it's towards the end of the film, when Jesse Eisenberg went to have this kind of moment, sort of come to Jesus moment, where he says to him, like, you know, I've never seen anyone that can light up a room, but then immediately S-H-I-T all over it, like, which is really what he does. Like, he brings people together, like, they're on the trip, and he gets talking to everybody in it. Like, a woman you heard there, Jennifer Grey, people would know her from Dirty Dancing. She's this recently divorced Jewish woman that is doing this to kind of rediscover herself and all the rest of it. And he kind of has this little bit of a flirtatious relationship with her. You're not really sure and all the rest of it. And then there's another character in it that is a survivor of the Rwandan genocide, but he converted to Judaism. And he's there just because, like, he feels like he wants to honour this religion that he's taken on board, and also kind of, not compare, but sort of
relate,
like,
anyway.
Relate, yeah. Exactly, yeah. And then there's like an old married couple that, you know, lived in New York for years, and very much stereotypical Jewish kind of couple, but they just wanted to do this because, you know, their kids are all gone off to college and they've got it. So everyone is kind of has their own kind of individual reasons for doing it. But the reason why these two are doing it is because their grandmother recently died and left them money. But as it turns out, as the story goes on, Kieran Culkin's character is obviously going through a lot, and it's slowly revealed as to why that is. Whereas Jesse Eisenberg's character has been kind of, you know, has problems as well. But, and again, there's another great line in it where he's talking about, you know, his cousin. And he says, like, oh, well, my pain is so obvious. It's so normal. Why would I bother sharing it? Why would I bother talking about it? Everyone feels this way, right? I mean, everyone feels like angry and kind of, you know, depressed and all the rest of it. But we get on with it because we have to get on with it. That's what we have to do. Otherwise, we just sit around all day and just be depressed, and that's not helping anybody. Mm. And that's so real. Like, that's so, it's such a real point. Like, I really connected with that, like, you know. And that's the thing, is like, this is such a human story. Like, it's so real and feels so lived in. And like I was talking about before, you do see Jesse Eisenberg, who wrote and directed this, like, almost kind of panicking in some scenes. You can see him in the background kind of going, oh God, what's he saying? What's he doing? He's going off score. But like, Kieran Culkin is just riffing it, and he's going through it, and he's like bouncing, and you can see the camera trying to keep up with him as he's running around the screen, because he's clearly just like going for it, you know, that kind of way. It feels so much more alive compared to what Jesse Eisenberg does in it. But again, it's that great compare and contrast, you know. But I love this. I thought this was great. I thought this was funny and sweet, and, you know, again, like, yeah, okay, fine. It's not a stretch to imagine Jesse Eisenberg as a buttoned up, neurotic Jewish man.
Yes.
Anyway, it's not a stretch to imagine Kieran Culkin as this kind of funny but overbearing, kind of obnoxious character that will just won't shut up. That's, wow, what a stretch. Like,
yeah.
But it uses these kind of elements in a very fun way, and a very kind of, you know, it's done with a lot of deftness. It's done with a lot of craft. It's done with a lot of ideas about, like, okay, why are they doing this? Is it just kind of, is this surface for a reason? You know, that sort of way. Well, there's actually something much darker and much deeper underneath
that. And on Eisenberg's part, it's kind of, you know, if you're going to direct and act in the film, you have to have a certain amount of self-knowledge. He knows what he's like, and he knows what the combination will be between him and Kieran Culkin.
Exactly.
So that's, you know.
Yeah, and like, I saw him doing, he did this podcast with Jesse Ware, and he talked about it, like, where he was like, I didn't really know him beforehand. And he, like, you almost kind of get the sense that he's just going to say, yeah, he annoyed the F out of me the entire time. But we got the film made, so whatever. But he's winning, like, he won the Golden Globe for it.
Yes.
I would not be surprised if he'll definitely get nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I could see him winning it. He's brilliant in it. It's so good. Like, he was so good in it. And I was worried that, like, he'd be, you know, kind of go the route of Bryan Cranston post Breaking Bad, where it's like, he'll do a couple of films, but he won't really kind of connect. But I would love to, I can't wait to see what he does next. Like, I really hope he kind of gets to, you know, keep working and keep doing these kind of films, like, because he's really talented. Like, and like, okay, fine, he does kind of play variations of the same character, but that's okay. Like, Jeff Goldblum made a career out of that.
Absolutely. You
know? He's doing Glengarry Glen, Glen Ross next.
So, that is so good. Yeah. And he's going to play Ricky Roman, yeah, is he? Oh, that's such good casting.
Can't wait.
Okay, that'll be interesting. That's a lot for today. Thanks to Fionnuala, Linda and Brian. Brian, I should say, someone's texting to say, I'm a massive Stephen King head too, but also a massive opera fan. Give it a chance.
All right.
Two things are not mutually exclusive.
Sure.
And we don't have time to talk about the third season of The Dry coming back to RTE. But then again, Movies and Booze probably isn't the best place to have that particular conversation.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.